Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 19, 2014. There are reports of rebels and government forces attacking each other under Upper Nile in violation of ceasefire agreement. And a group of musicians say disabilities does not stop them from contributing to society.
I was lost hope before, but when she joined this group, I become okay. She can be like anybody. Like, I'm even proud for her.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Upper Nile state officials are accusing rebels led by former Vice President Riek Machar of attacking government positions in Obel and Doileb this morning. They say government forces repulsed the attackers. For VOA News, Charlton Doki has more from Juba.
Katiluak Lipoth, Upper Nile state's acting information minister, says the rebels launched the attacks on two separate villages and targeted government forces' positions.
They crossed the river. The river so bad, and they came and attacked our forces, the adversary forces in Obel and Doileb. In the same time, our forces fight back, defend themselves, and then they defeated the force of Riek Machar, and then they cross again the river for the fight.
Lipoth says the attacks happened at around 5 a.m. local time. He did not provide any information on casualties, but claimed that the SPLA had captured some ammunition from the rebels after repulsing them.
Yes, in our side there's no casualties, but we heard that there's a casualties, but up to now there's no details. There's no detail reported in the side of the river, of the side of the rebels. We are told that there's casualties in that side, but there's no detail up to now. Some ammunition and guns are captured, but how many of them? It is not yet disclosed to us.
Lipoth says this is just the latest violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement by the rebels, of which he says there have been many. Leaders of the two warring sides first signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in January. In May, they recommitted themselves to the agreement. Both sides have been accused of repeatedly violating the agreement. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Waki Simon Wudu has written and prepared this report. Meanwhile, SPLM in opposition spokesperson says government forces attacked defensive positions this morning in Upper Nile State. Lul Roy Kong told VOA fellow Lucy Pony that opposition forces are in control of several villages, including Doileb, south of Malakal.
Around 6:30, government forces from four positions tried to advance on our positions to the Dole Fields, south of Malakal, at Zinc East, Obel on the western bank of Wai River, and Aishabanil, also in the south. All these places are being occupied by the government, and we are just surrounding these forces to contain them from making advances further. And they advanced in different directions on our positions, and we fought back. It is not true that they were able to repulse us. It is the opposite. They are in control of the Olive Hills. There's also a small military outpost called Pantur and Aishabanil, as we speak. We are in control after the government lost when they attempted to advance on our positions.
They are also claiming that they captured a lot of ammunition from your forces and they had no casualties. Do you have any numbers of casualties?
No, well, the information I've just received from our operations commander is that we were able to capture 85 AK-47, 42 PKM, these light machine guns, four Title and cruisers, destroyed one tank, captured two-way radio communication with the solar system intact, five RPGs, and on casualties, we intercepted a radio message saying that they lost 35 in action and 67 wounded in action, the latest information I've received on the government casualties.
Do you have any casualties on your side?
We took around 3 casualties.
Is the fight still on?
No, we have taken up positions. We are consolidating our gains on the territories I've just told you about. And we are still sticking to our containment policy. We want to make sure that the government force that lost these territories do not come back from El Akal where they ran to. We were provoked and we fought back and they could not hold their ground. We only fight in self-defense. Where the government loses territory, we take control to avoid any security vacuum.
That's SPLA in opposition spokesperson Lul Roy Kong speaking from Addis Ababa. A local journalist in Malakal town who asked that his name not be used to ensure his safety says Doileb is still under government control. There is no independent confirmation of rebel claims from aid agencies working in Upper Nile. Eight months after rebels and government forces were fighting over control of Jonglei State's capital Bor, traders and residents are slowly returning to rebuild their homes and businesses. The town's population remains only half of the size of its original population. VOA fellow Nabil Biajo has more.
The strains of a gospel song being played in a shop near Bor's main roundabout fill the air. The song from Dinka Bor Hymns means give thanks to Jesus in all circumstances. 8 months ago, Bor was the scene of fierce battles between government and opposition forces. Dead bodies littered the streets. For months afterwards, the streets were so empty that the official described the Jonglei State capital as a ghost town. But today, residents like Philip Awan say life is slowly returning to normal.
We are now selling solar again, and we are making small business like charging to that is absent the life.
Control over Bor changed hands several times between government and anti-government forces before government troops finally assumed control of the town on January 18th. 3 days after it fell to government forces, the marketplace was reduced to smoldering debris. The iron-sheeted roofs of shops burned along with all of their contents inside. Today, about half of the shops are once again open for business. Their shelves are stocked with food and household goods. 20-year-old Awan says before the fighting, he used to sell solar panels and operate a mobile phone charging business. But his business was destroyed during the fighting and all the items were looted. Awan says though he has re-established his business, there are no enough buyers.
Those who are here, those who came from village, and those who are in town here, they went to other places like Gwalior and Uganan. And those who came from village, they cannot afford to buy solars.
Awan says despite the challenges ahead, he plans to remain in Bor and help rebuild his hometown. 45-year-old Jacob Mading, a father of five, sells cooking oil, maize flour, and onions. Mading says when fighting broke out in Juba and quickly spread to Bor last December, he had to leave his fully stocked shop. I fled, crossing the River Nile to the western side. And when I returned after the town was recaptured by the government, I found that everything was looted. There was nothing left in the shop. When I sat down and reviewed my stock, I found that I had lost 87,000 South Sudanese pounds. All that money just went to waste. 87,000 South Sudanese pounds is equivalent to about 30,000 US dollars. Mading says he has no plot of his own in the market, so he had to rent one to build his shop. To reopen his business, he borrowed money from relatives and friends.
Our government is working very hard to make sure that some compensation is done to people, and it has to go through a rigorous process of assessment.
Some shop owners are still erecting wooden poles and using iron sheets for roofs and siding, which they say are cheap to transport from Juba. Bor Town Mayor Nial Majak Nial says the government has a program to help people who lost their businesses during the fighting. Majak says the government will issue forms to all business people to register personal details and any losses incurred during the fighting.
That is going to be very, very difficult exercise to actually get to know very well how much was lost by individuals. One, everybody will claim. Number two, the government has to get to look for the resources. I probably have given you a very lengthy answer, but it's a very difficult question because had I had anything in my hand, I would have given it to people.
Majak says the town is now secure and there are no reports of night robberies or attacks on individuals. Majak says he hopes residents will have the confidence to return. More than 150,000 former residents are living across the Nile River in Minka Kam, also known as Galyar in Lakes State. Mading says he hopes a peace agreement is reached in Addis Ababa, but he does not believe the government will compensate traders like him. I am not optimistic because many pledges have not come to pass. You could be confident if there were previous accomplishments by the government, but how can you assume that the government is serious when they have not respected their past commitments? Still, Mading says he hopes all those who fled Bor will return one day soon. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Civil servants in Warrap State have welcomed the decision by state officials to extend the so-called Friday as Farming Days policy. The day was originally supposed to run from April until August, but authorities prolonged it into this month when they realized that many crops were still in the fields. Santino Manuta Yuel reports from the state capital, Kwajok.
Warrap State Agriculture Minister Mijongbol Ku says officials decided to reinstate Fridays as farming days almost as soon as they expired. They did so because many crops on small farms were ready for harvest, but the people who planted them did not have the time to gather them from the fields because they work other jobs.
People have cultivated and their crops are not yet out from the field, especially groundnuts and even the sorghum and some other crops. So we said let Friday be there, and then also we said if Friday is taken out, then our policy of cultivating the short variety, which is sorghum, Gadam Hamam, would also not get time for them to do it.
Kwanya Court works as civil servant for Warrap State government most days of the week. Some of the groundnuts and sorghum that he planted on his farm 5 months ago are drying in the sun after being harvested. Parts of the small piece of land on the outskirts of Kwajok, where Akot palms are covered with dark green short variety sorghum. Akot planted the crop a month ago. Usually, everything would have been harvested by now. But this year, Akot says rain came earlier in Kwajok and he was able to plant the short variety sorghum after he harvested the past lot. But some people in other part of Warrap State had to sow late because the rains came later than usual in their areas. He says government's announcement that it was reinstating Fridays as farming day will benefit him and people who planted late.
It is going to help those who did not cultivate it earlier because in some part like Twitch County, cultivated very late. And for those who have got a problem of blood, for example, Toyn North and even some part of Toyn East, it is going to help them.
In Warrap, the rains usually come in April, but serious farming starts in May. The state government is pushing people to grow short variety sorghum because they say it thrives even without rain. Dean Colnian also works as civil servant. He says decision to extend the day off for farming means civil servants will be less dependent on their government salaries. He says it will also help the state government's efforts to eradicate poverty through farming.
What the government is doing and what the civil servants are doing outside also, it is part of help to the government. If you devolve yourself to have a small farm, then you assist government.
Adil Mejok works most days at the State Ministry of Information and turns to small field in a spare time. She says that when the government suspended Fridays as farming days, she wondered what would happen with the crop of groundnuts that was still in a field. Without Friday farming days, she would not have time to harvest a crop, which she mainly uses to feed her family. She hopes that the policy will be continued for years to come.
Leaders come and leaders go. So I wish another leader can also do it like that some years to come, so that every Friday can be given to any official so that he can go and cultivate and also prepare his garden.
The state agricultural minister says that now farming days was being reinstated. People who still have crops in the field should use their Fridays wisely. He says the day helps people to be self-sufficient and to make some extra cash by selling their crops in the market. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manuta Yuel in Kwajok, Warao State.
Tension is growing between Western Bahr al-Ghazal executives and the legislature over financial resources and legal procedures in the assembly. The state assembly is accusing the governor of interfering in their affairs and undermining the power of the Speaker of the House. But the governor insists he is following the constitution. VOA fellow Michael Atit reports.
Western Bahr al-Ghazal State Assembly Speaker Andrea Mayar Acho says the financial resources allocated for the delivery of the basic services such as healthcare, roads, and security has not been utilized effectively. Mayar says the state budget expenses are not clear and civil servant salaries are often delayed for months.
When we, as the assembly, ask about how the budget of the state is spent, they say, why do you ask about the budget? But we are the assembly. We were elected by the people to look out for their interest and to solve their problems.
Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan held a news conference this week to explain how the state budget is put together.
The budget is distributed according to the census results. We have tried to complain to the National Assembly that our budget is too little compared to our expenses. So I expect from our State Assembly to work with us so that our state budget can be increased.
Mayar also accused Governor Zakaria of violating the Constitution by appointing replacement for three members of parliament arrested for playing a role violent incidents in December 2012, in which 10 people were killed by security forces for protesting against the relocation of the administrative headquarters from Wau to Ngobagari. Western Bahr al-Ghazal State Member of Parliament Peter Andel Martin says proper procedure were not followed. Andal says if there is any vacancy in the assembly, the speaker will notify the election commission. After that, he says the commission will act accordingly. Andal says they might decide to hold an election in that particular constituency or look for an immediate replacement. Or else, they can ask the constituents who they would like to represent them. Governor Zakaria says he has the constitutional right to intervene when needed. Emilio Patrick, a member of the Western Bahr al-Ghazal Election Commission, says any replacement of a member of a parliament must be carried out through their office.
All letters regarding replacing any member of parliament are supposed to come through our office, but we had never received any notice about that. According to the election law, Article 62, Subarticle 1, this is only allowed in case of death or impeachment.
Western Bahr al-Ghazal State has been the scene of a bitter political dispute within the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement Party. Last year, President Salva Kiir has to intervene to put an end to the political upheaval there. That was before the political crisis erupted in mid-December, which led to more than 10,000 deaths across the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, one girl is doing to pay her school fees to get back to school. That story is coming back after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle gossip?
To be an example, I will not yell at the person or I will not confront the person. I will just have to let it go and handle it my own way. Handle it my own way is just like remain calm and try to get, you know, to the root of the matter.
Gossip, I don't take it as in serious things because I know gossip is there. Because maybe you can see me, then you will say, Marty, oh, this lady is like this and this. I don't believe in gossip.
I just tend to look at gossip with a blind eye, meaning I don't give them credence. Because gossip, as far as I'm concerned, tend to look at things not very objectively. They just listen, it's just a hearsay, okay? Anything they hear or anything they see in their own words, they carry it to another person and it's modified along the way.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The parents of many South Sudanese children cannot afford to pay school fees. As a result, their children often drop out of school. In Yei town of Central Equatorial State, one girl is determined to stay in school despite her family's inability to pay her school fees. She sells tea in town, hoping to raise enough money to pay her school fees on her own. Ochan Hannington has more from Yei.
A busy street in Yei town, 17-year-old Lillian Alon sets up her table in front of her ramshackle canteen constructed out of plastic tarpaulin and paper cartons, serving her first customer of the day some black tea. Lillian is trying to raise enough money to stay in school, but it's not easy. Her parents do not pay her school fees.
My dad and my mom, they are all drunkards and they're not able to pay my school fees. I'm doing business of cooking tea, but I don't know if God can help me to get that 120 so that I go back to school. Sometimes when the business is good, maybe I will get 15 for day. Sometimes if the business is not there, I will get only £10, either I go with nothing at home.
Lillian wakes up at 5 a.m. each morning to start her work. She cooks tea, coffee, and rice to sell on the street. If she raises enough money through her business, she plans to return to school next year and fulfill her dream of getting an education. From 2005 to 2010, South Sudan moved from a point where very few of its children attended school to one where enrollment increased 20% a year, bringing an additional 1.5 million children into the school system. South Sudan has some of the worst education indicators in the world. Estimates from UNICEF and others suggest that around 1.3 million, or about half of primary school-age children, are not in school. Like many other South Sudanese girls, Lillian dropped out of school in her first year of secondary education. She says she would have finished her secondary education by now if she could study without interruptions. She says she usually has to work for a year to earn enough money to pay the school fees for the following year, while Lillian is not in class. She says not being in class for an entire year makes her feel sad. Lillian is not alone. At Rush Secondary School in Yei Town, about a quarter of the students struggle to pay for their own education. Luate Sheme Henry is the headmaster at Rush. He says he is aware of students in situations like Lillian's, and that even though his school cannot waive fees for poor students, they are trying to offer some help.
So being a private school, we really don't help them much. We will have some projects here where we request people who can do some work and can convert that into fees within the school premises. Once we stabilize, we'll extend our help to more than the only person we have got.
Luate says they cannot do this for everyone, as they are overwhelmed by the need. UNICEF estimates South Sudan's adult literacy rate to be 27%, while it says 70% of the children from 6 to 17 never set foot in a classroom. For VOA News, I am Ochan Hennington in Yei.
A group of young blind South Sudanese are using music to change what they say are negative attitudes towards people living with disabilities. The group launched an 8-song album over the weekend that's generating a lot of interest. Mungome Debs Rakarinch attended the album launch at Juba University campus and filed this report for VOA from Juba.
Excitement filled the air as the blind musicians called Hidden Ability Melodies Group performed songs from their first album. The songs were composed by Anthony Pitia Joseph and Henry Soka, both of whom are visually impaired activists. Pitia says the album's title, Reality, was derived from their daily experiences.
You just enter the market, you start greet people that, how are you, or salam alaikum, then people will begin to say, Allah Kareem, there's nothing, as if you are coming to beg. That's why we come with that. And then even in the government institutions, the ministries and other private sectors, if you want to go and visit even one of your friends or one of the brothers there, then they will begin to say that maybe you are going to ask money.
Henry Soka says the same thing happens to him.
Discrimination is bad. So discrimination on any ground, whether on disability, you know, based on your tribe, you know, we are against every form of discrimination. So other people should also join us in the campaign, because we are not only talking about disability. What we are saying is that when you meet somebody on the way, don't call them Amian Wele Atarash Wala Hajakira. At least you call them Yashab Wele Yashaba Wele Ohud Wele Ahui, but don't call them Mwawaki. Don't call them Amian.
6 girls are part of the 16-member group, including 22-year-old Estella Peter and her friend, 23-year-old Joyce Dicone. Dicone says being a female without eyesight is even more challenging.
During marriage, it's very difficult to get a person who is sighted if you are a blind lady. So even if you get a person who is sighted, sometimes the family will say, no, why do you marry this lady? She's disabled. This is one of the challenges that we are facing in our community. So we want to show them that we, women with disabilities, we can do what other women are doing also.
Peter Locho Lohule, Estella Peter's father, is excited to see his daughter perform before a live audience.
I was lost hope before, but when she joined this group, I become okay. She can be like anybody. Like, I'm even proud for her.
He says parents who have children with disabilities should ensure that their children get an education. Otim Jamal, who teaches education psychology at University of Juba, was pleasantly surprised by the performance.
It was so much a surprise because I didn't expect such good things from them. Very good and very enjoyable.
Never call me by my disability. I have a name.
A dozen people lined up to buy the album after the performance. And members of the Hidden Ability Melodies group say they plan to keep performing wherever they are invited to play. For VOA News, I am Mugume Debs Rwakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Heart Attack by Radio and Whistle. We have been listening to Radio and Whistle with the song Heart Attack. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.